Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 27th, 2015. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I'd like to take this opportunity to wish my mom a happy birthday and my parents a happy anniversary. February 27th is their anniversary. They've been married like 53 years, something like that, 54 years. It's been a long time. So, happy
everybody,
anniversary.
Everybody direct your eyes to the Jumbotron.
The kiss cam.
Any listeners that would like us to shout out happy birthdays every month, apparently we can do that now.
Hey, if you're related to me, I'll give you a shout out. It's possible they could be listening to the show. You know, every once in a while, my mom will be like, hey, you know what? I haven't listened to the show in a while, and click on it and listen. So it's possible. You never know.
Well, happy birthday to him. Happy birthday.
All right, there you go. See, you could have just been nice and done that and take the high road, but instead you had to make a wise ass.
No, it's the poker. You can't be nice in poker. Going to be a jerk at every opportunity.
Very nice.
All right, so the Seals with Clubs poker set.
Love that name. That's funny. That's a funny name, by the way.
It is. I like when they did the little twist. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Particularly on something like that. I always hate those commercials when those guys are clubbing the seals. Oh, I hate it.
Oh, man,
I'm
scary.
A big animal guy. Oh, it's terrible. But anyhow, so we got off on track already. Three minutes.
I know.
So Seals with Clubs, the online poker site that grew in popularity because it was completely anonymous and traded in bitcoins, abruptly shut down this week. Chairman Brian Micon's home in Las Vegas was raided by law enforcement officers. But Micon wasn't charged with the crime. He has since moved his family to Antigua. We're getting out of here.
Get up and go.
We're safe. And there he intends to open a new site using this Seals with Clubs name shortly. Lots of stuff going on with this, but crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, who would suspect that an anonymous site using bitcoins could have a problem?
Well, got a couple dots to connect here. One, there seem to be some technical glitches unrelated to this raid. The servers were in Romania, I believe it was, and so that was also going on while the raid came. Okay. Very odd. I mean, Micon posted this video describing the raid, so people can go check that out. It's all over the interwebs. But obviously, it was charged with crime. It was a Nevada gaming control kind of thing for not having a license for having an online site, which obviously makes sense. But they let them flee to Antigua. I should say flee. They let them go to Antigua.
Yeah.
But a couple things I thought were interesting. One, according to him, they just busted down the door and came in you know, guns and riot gear and everything. Very similar to a free poker league raid that we had here in our area a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, in Tampa area.
Which I think is hilarious because, he's saying the same thing that the guys at the free poker league was, you know, hey, you can knock. I'll open your door. If you got some kind of warrant thing, I'm going to get out of the way. You can come on in. No need to, like, you know, storm the beaches of Normandy here. and then there's a little split between some other of the Seals with Clubs board members and Brian, and those ones decided it was best just to end this whole thing, and they also wished him well, Brian, on and going off and doing his new one, which apparently is going to be obviously based in Antigua with new software and everything. So a lot of weird stuff going on with this site.
Yeah, that's Antigua's a nice place, though.
I've heard it's wonderful.
It's an upgrade from Vegas, I think. What do you think?
Yeah,
there's water there.
quite honestly, I don't know how anybody lives in Vegas. I mean, it's a nice place to visit, but it's a very exhausting place to live, I think. But
I wonder if his new site will use Bitcoins or regular money now. That
I think it's going to be Bitcoins and everything. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, you have this whole player base, right? That has, of course, they're anonymous, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, and it sounds like it depends who you're talking to, whether he has access to that database or not, or you know, whatever other kind of stuff going on. So if you're on Seals with Clubs, you're going to find out soon enough what this all means. But the Bitcoin thing was huge. I mean, I know a lot of people that really enjoyed using the Bitcoins. And I think the big reason they took off was the anonymity. You know, you just don't have any other poker site out there that has that kind of anonymity. I mean, obviously your screen name, but you know, you got to give them your real name to get paid.
Right.
They're just completely out in the wind. So, which is interesting because one of the big things that people always complain about online sites, right, is how safe is it? Everybody wants it to be safe.
Yeah, because every people are think it's dubious. I mean, there's a lot of stuff where it goes, you know, there have been a lot of issues with it too, so it's understandable.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, nothing can be safe on the internet, so that's just the way it is.
Right.
That's right, but the fact that there were a number of people that were fine playing anonymously and enjoying it. I know a couple of players that did quite well on the site, so, I mean, they obviously did all right, so interesting little chapter in our internet poker history.
And doesn't it just suck that we have to do these kind of jump over these hurdles and do all this kind of stuff just to play poker online? I mean, it's just, it's getting monotonous and ridiculous.
It is. It absolutely is.
You know? Unbelievable.
But, All right, well, also unbelievable is that there's yet another new poker movie out.
Right, we talked about this movie, right? Mississippi Grind?
This is Mississippi Grind.
Oh, Grind. I'm sorry, what did I say, Grand?
I love this name, too, Mississippi Grind. It's pretty cool. Debuted at the Sundance Film Festival. I'm not sure whether it's actually in release yet or not, but stars Ryan Reynolds, who I know you have some opinions on. But the movie is about a completely new take on poker, right? Debt-ridden poker player teaming with a younger player to hopefully change his luck. That's never been done before, right? That whole storyline.
No, that's...
In every single poker movie ever, right?
Here's the deal. Ryan Reynolds. What's the deal with him? I can't tell if he's a cool guy or... You know, like...
He is the coolest guy.
He's the coolest guy. I mean, he totally destroyed the Green Lantern franchise in one fell swoop.
See, I'm an adult, so I don't watch cartoons.
Yeah, because only 45 billion other people watch the Marvel and DC Comics movies. But yeah, you're right. And TV shows, too. But no, yeah, you're the only adult out there. It's all 12-year-olds getting into R-rated movies and whatever. But he was like an X-Men and... You know, when you want to see how good of an actor he is, they give him the role where they force you to seal your mouth shut, by the way. So what does that say about his ability to act? I don't know. But I like Ryan Reynolds. He's cool.
Well, here's what I'll say about Ryan Reynolds. One, he's been on some great shows. Two Guys and a Girl was a great show back in the day.
Never heard of it.
Awesome, either. But he's been married to Alanis Morissette.
Okay.
Scarlett Johansson.
Married to her?
And now Blake Lively.
Wow. He's married all three of them? I know Blake Lively has a kid with her now or something. But
yes, exactly.
But wow.
Yeah, see? I mean, doesn't he get some respect for that? That's a pretty good hat trick, right?
Yeah, that's a good trio right there.
I mean, how many men out there would be happy with any one of those
three? Well, this guy
one, he goes out and finds another one.
You that's pretty impressive. Oh, man. So are we going to go to theaters and watch this movie together?
You know what? I'm intrigued by this only because of Ryan Reynolds. But I'm also intrigued by it because it's been described as a modern-day California Split.
No way.
Which I know you loved.
Oh, fantastic movie.
Sarcasm noted.
Yes.
But I thought it was a great movie. And if folks, long-time listeners of the show, remember when Fast and I, you just... Loved this movie. We talked about it back in the 70s with Elliot Gould and I forget who else, but not so much poker in it, it's more gambling, but I thought it was a really good movie back in the, you know, set in the 70s with the self deal and the California card rooms and stuff, an era that's gone by, right?
But wait a minute. Now let's back up a second here though, okay? I liked that part of the movie.
You like that part of the movie.
And by the way, I don't know how you could forget George Segal. I mean, he only stars in the greatest TV show ever right now called The Goldbergs. But other than that, love the Goldbergs. All right, so anyway, here's the deal. When you guys told me about the movie California Split, I'm like, oh, it's a poker movie? Like, yeah, it's poker. It's the California card rooms, Gardenia, whatever. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And it starts there, and I'm like, this is going to be an awesome movie. After about 10 minutes, they're never in a card room again, except for at the end he goes in the tournament against Slim. And I mean, it's just weird. It's just, there's so many, it's so depressing. It's such a depressing movie to me. I don't know.
He throws oranges on escalators.
I know,
awesome.
that was funny. But I mean, really though, it was so depressing for most of the movie, if not all of the movie. It was just
let's be honest. There's no gambling movie out there. And yes, I'm throwing poker into the gambling sphere for movie's sake.
Okay.
There's none of those that isn't depressing in some way, right? Because they are always focusing on the down and luck, and then the get rich quick, and then lose it all. Every movie has some part of that. Because if you don't have that, why are you going to go to a movie?
Right, I guess.
Are you going to go to a movie and watch people play, you know, poker profitably for the entire hour and a half?
I guess.
Boring, right?
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you just go to the poker room and watch a bunch of people do that.
But yeah.
Every movie's got to have some kind of storyline, and it's got to appeal to the masses, and it's not going to appeal to the masses unless you got somebody that put their last dollar at the table and hit that lucky card. And that's depressing, right? Because you never want to be thinking of yourself in that spot where you've got, like, nothing. You know, you've worked your entire life, you had nothing.
Yeah.
You're just this two-bit gambler that's down to his last dollar. No one ever wants to think that that's going to happen to him, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So they're all going to be depressing.
I'm duly scolded.
But some might have a happy ending.
So some people are saying this movie reflects that. And that,
that was one of the reviews I saw. Somebody said that. Now, obviously, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I mean, it could just be because it's kind of the poker buddy thing, you know, two people going on a tour together. That could be the only attachment between this and California's Play. If that's the case, it's terrible. But
so tell me why people are still making poker movies. Is it because poker is just a universal game? It's always going to be around, and it's one of America's pastimes now, that they just think it's an interesting vehicle to use to convey a story? Or are they just that far behind the curve and not realizing the boom ended, you know, years ago because they're Hollywood?
You know, that's actually a very interesting question. We could probably spend 4 hours on that, which we won't, but no, that's a good point. Maybe we'll get some discussion going on that. Maybe somebody over at Poker Radius will start something and talk about
that.
That's a good discussion, because you're right, it's you know, the boom is done. Obviously, we plateaued, so it's not like there's a lot of, you know, non-pokerish people that are still being introduced to poker these days to the point that a movie sounds exciting to. But again, I guess my other point, too, is it doesn't sound like this plot is anything different than we've seen, right?
Mm-mm.
I mean, about the only different thing we've seen in a poker movie recently is Runner, Runner, and that was just god-awful, right?
Yeah.
But points for doing something a little bit different. More points for actually doing a watchable movie, but
and like we said, that movie totaled all of what, 8.5 minutes of poker in it, and it happened to be in a movie, and then there was no more poker for the rest of the movie. So it wasn't a poker movie; it was a joke of a movie. Hey, guys.
And I guess in general, I mean, gambling poker movies are you have that built in stuff in a movie, right? You know, good guys, bad guys, winners, losers. You know, whether that's, you know, war, politics, poker, it's all the same formula, right? And people get behind that. So I guess that's why they still make it. It's an easy formula.
Right.
And then, of course, you throw Ryan Reynolds in and you're going to get, you know, someone showing up.
Girls want to be with him, guys want to be him.
Yeah, that kind of guy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He was in that movie, The Proposal, with Sandra Bullock.
Yes, it is. So you saw all the bad movies. You didn't see Van Wilder.
I remember Van Wilder. I think I saw that.
Yeah, see, so you get the wrong part of the...
Was that National Lampoon?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I did see that.
Yes, you get the wrong part of the filmography.
I'm on the wrong end of the spectrum of Ryan Reynolds movies.
Right, exactly.
Come on, X-Men is good.
Again, adult.
Oh, man, you're not an adult. Believe me, if, out of the two of us, you are the least adult. Believe me.
Very true, very true, yes.
But we'll have to check this out somehow. I don't know, if it goes direct to DVD, one of us will get it.
It got really good views at Sundance, so, I mean, it sounds like this is not a lucky you. This is an actual well-done movie.
You know what, though? In retrospect, I kind of like Lucky You now. Like, if I see it on, like, Lifetime or something, I'll stop and watch it. I really will, because the nostalgia of seeing all the poker guys that you don't really get to see on TV anymore, and I mean, some of it's corny and stupid and bad, but I mean, I don't know, just, you know, seeing, you know, Sammy and Doyle, and it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, see, because it appeals to you as a poker player.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a general public. I'm not
general popcorn muncher going to the movies.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not holding it up to that, but I'll kind of stop at Lucky You if I see it on TV for at least 20 minutes. At least until I see Jennifer Harmon, like, knock on the felt, you know, that stupid thing they made her do. I'm sure she still regrets to this day.
Oh, man. But, yeah, this one is at Sundance, so it's got to be good enough to at least make it to Sundance.
All right. I'm going to check it out then.
All right, Antia fans, looking for a way to win an Antia Poker Cruise package from their laptop, now have that option.
Cool.
Very excited. We've
Very
worked
cool.
this forever, right? RaiderPoker.net, a new subscription model online poker site, is running daily multi-table and single-table satellites for a March 29th tournament, where the top 20% of that field will win a cruise package for November 7th sailing out of Tampa, and should be repeating those tournaments every month going forward.
Very cool.
A chance to win a cruise package from home. And, of course, subscription poker is permitted in 35 states and District of Columbia, so hopefully you live in one of those awesome states that let you play. And you get a set amount of Raiders, which is their online currency, to play with for your $16.95 monthly subscription fee. And they get VIP packages and things like that as well, too. So give RaiderPoker.net a try out.
And speaking of online poker, you know, you can join the Andy Up Nation every Sunday online at 8 p.m. Eastern at AdvancedPokerTraining.com for our co-branded series. All you have to do is create a free account to be able to play. And don't forget Papes, our free online fan series. It holds events on all dates ending with a 6. So the next events are February 26th, March 6th, March 16th, and March 26th on PokerStars. Details can be found at Antie Up Nation Events Groups Discussion on PokerRadius.com. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call of Four and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com. Poker's newest social networking site and home of the Antie Up Group discussions comes from Sean, who is a regular on Poker Radius. And let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys, it's Sean. Yes, that's Sean from Poker Radius. I'm calling with a quick question for you guys. Currently, my home game has kind of disappeared on me and doesn't look like it's going to start up anytime soon. So I was wondering if there's any good way to find a new home game or a way to reinvigorate an old home game. I don't have the capability of hosting a home game, but my friends do. So is there any way I can get people back on board so we can start having some more poker fun? Love the show, guys. Hope you're having a great time.
All right, so funny story from the Antioch Poker Cruise. That kind of somewhat starts to answer this question, right?
All right.
So I'm sitting there talking to a guy and one of our longtime cruisers, and he was on some kind of website called Home Game Poker, Poker Home Game, something like that. I forget what. I remember from back in the day.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, too. Yeah.
Right, but still out. And I wish I knew the exact website, because that would certainly help Sean a lot more than this story I'm giving. But anyhow, so the point is, there's a website out there where you can hook up with other people that are interested in home game, Sean. So check that out.
Okay.
Somehow.
Okay.
But anyhow, so this cruise passenger was telling a story about how he found a game near his hometown, wanted to be part of it, started sharing message with the organizer. The organizer, very responsibly, concerned about letting new people in unless they knew him, right? Because, you know, you don't want to, you know, home
yeah.
games can be dangerous
yeah.
Or sometimes illegal. So, you know, be careful on who you're letting in, right? So they go back and forth, and eventually they find out they were high school classmates, Chris.
Wow. That's
Isn't that kind
bizarre.
Of funny?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Hadn't seen each other since high school, and obviously I believe the home game went on with him, obviously, because he knew him.
Yeah, of course.
Kind of funny,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that is awesome. That's like the, you know, the amulet. You know, I got one half the amulet, you have the other half, and someday we'll meet and see each other.
Don't think it was quite like that, but maybe there's a second part of the story I didn't hear.
Twins separated at birth, you know? They somehow reunite 30 years later. But that is pretty cool. So they're like, because they're talking anonymously on these sites, right? They're not.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I haven't been on that, whatever that site is. I wish I could remember for a long time. But you know, some people are more guarded than others, but
yeah.
That's the way to go. So I guess the Sean's question, obviously check that out, but I would say, my opinion is, if you have the opportunity to reinvigorate your game, which he mentioned, that's so much easier than creating a new game, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, whatever you got to do, you know, say I'm going to have better snacks, you know, massages. I don't know. Whatever you got to do to get people to show up. Change the stakes, change the games, make it a tournament if you don't have a tournament, make it a mixed tournament, you know. You know, have some sort of instructor, something, you know, I don't know. I mean, something that you think that will get people to say, hey, that'd be a cool night out, rather than just, you know, we're going back to play the same old, you know, 25-7-50s in the limit game. Or I mean, I have no idea. I guess you have to maybe do sort of a poll or
a survey
or something of your friends and say, hey, what would get you guys to start showing up again and doing this again? And the other thing, too, is you can always make... You know, bring it up at the office. I think we've talked about this before. If you have a job like that, or you know, and if you do have a casino to play at, you know, and you have friends there that, you know, might enjoy playing with you, or, you know, it there's a lot of things you could probably do. But I don't think you want to do something like Craigslist or Facebook. I mean, maybe Facebook, because you might be able to trust the friends of friends. You know, if you tag all your poker players in it or something, can you do that?
Yeah, that's a little different, because, yeah, there's no anonymity there, and then you can have a friend vouch for a friend.
Yeah, so maybe you try that.
Confident, but... But, yeah, I mean, obviously, a long-time listener of our show know that our Antiope home game has gone through a number of different incarnations over the years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think it ever broke up, ever, but... You know, at times we start talking about, hey, you know, we still want to play how we're doing, and we changed it. So so I think that's the much easier route to say, hey, what can we do to get everybody back together? And also be a little, be willing to compromise a little bit, right?
Sure.
Be able to say, hey, you know, I don't really want to play this, but if it means getting the home game together, I'm fine doing that. Let it grow from there.
But, you'd be surprised, too, how often people are just waiting for you to say, hey, when we have the next home game or whatever, because they just don't have the gumption to start it themselves or to make that phone call or send that group email or something. They're busy with their everyday lives, not really thinking about it, not thinking about it. And then the minute you say, hey, guys, we haven't had a home game in 6 months. You know, I'm available this month. You want to do one? All of a sudden, boom, these people might be like, oh, yeah. Oh, man, why it takes so long? And then all of a sudden, you get everybody together again. And then it gets back to routine, so you'd just be surprised. So just, I think if the effort is made, you probably will be able to reinvigorate or at least get something going again.
Well, I hope so, Sean. Let us know.
He's real, real popular on the Poker Radius.
He's got a crazy idea of the week. Yeah. It's almost a new segment that he's created for himself.
It's pretty cool.
Some of them are really crazy, but some are pretty cool, too. So, well, we appreciate him participating.
Exactly. I like people who sit there and think about stuff like that and are always thinking. You know, got to be creative, so... All right, you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game that you've reinvigorated, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. All right, I'll read it. This says, during a recent session, I was dealt a pair of tens. I'm assuming he's at a poker room, so. He says, the flop brings me quads, and I look at the clock and see there is less than 3 minutes left before the high-end jackpot is awarded and reset. The high hand is listed as king's full. The pot is big enough to qualify for the jackpot, so I check the flop and turn and bet the river. Unfortunately, there was no bad beat jackpot because once I proudly displayed my hand, my table mate informs me that seconds before quad aces was announced. I received zip, nada, squat. Well, he got the opportunity to write Annie up, a privilege he always values, and he's sure to console... he said, I'm sure you're going to console me with Antiope cruise tickets headed his way. I don't think so. he said, had I known that my hand was B, I would have taken my time and delayed the conclusion of the hand until the time expired and I qualify for the subsequent jackpot. What are the tactics and governing rules to delaying the conclusion of a hand? If I had faked a heart attack, would they have considered my hand dead? This was an anonymous thing. This didn't come in from anyone in particular.
Yeah, I don't think there was a name on it, so which makes it a little hard for us to send you an Antiope cruise ticket. But the faking heart attack, yeah, that probably would be a problem.
You just happen to have quads. Oh, that's what gave me the heart attack, quad tens. I was so excited. I couldn't handle it.
Oh, Martha, I'm coming to join you. But I think in general, I mean, if we're talking here like a couple minutes before the high hands, I mean, I think you could stall a little bit there, right?
Without anybody saying anything? I think so.
I mean, the worst they're going to do is call the clock on you, right? And then they call the clock on you, you got a minute there. So, I mean, right. If we're talking 3 minutes before the next high hand, you know, you stall for 2 minutes, and then somebody calls the clock on you, and bingo, bango, bongo.
The first thing you do is you just pretend that you didn't know the action was on you.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And then when they say, what, it's on me? But no, wait. And then you talk for a couple minutes. And then they're like, what? No, because then he, did you check? You checked? I didn't see you check. Can we get the floor here? I want to make sure. By the time you do all that, the 2 minutes are gone. But if you don't, if you still need the delay after that, then you just go into the whole Hollywood and thinking thing. And then, you know, I mean, I think he could have burned 2 or 3 minutes. Ethically, whatever.
Well, I mean, people take that kind of time all the time. And obviously, it's unfortunate because you're slowing down the game for everyone else. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming this is a high end, so this is cash and not a tournament. So, you know, it's a little less important to be quickly acting, right?
Yeah.
But I also think probably people, if you're in a room that has a jackpot like this, everybody's kind of thinking about that, right? Because anytime somebody gets a qualifying hand, like, you know, 10 minutes into the period, the talking table invariably turns like, oh, I wonder if it's going to hold up. I hope it holds up. And, yeah. You know, cause everybody, even though they don't win anything, they want somebody at the table to win, right? So I think there's a little unspoken camaraderie there that, you know, if you're close to that time flipping over, that no one's really going to be that bent out of shape.
Especially if the table gets a share or something. If the table gets a share, they're all going to be like, yeah, let's just delay it.
Right, yeah. You know, well, I mean, but yeah, couldn't say it out loud.
No, you know what I mean? They're going to see why you delay it. They'll understand and not be, you know, of course, it makes them stay there for another hour. If they didn't want to stay for an hour, now they got to stay and play more poker just in case they win the partial part of this jackpot.
Well, yeah, so we talk about tactics and governing rules. I don't think there really are, for a cash game, any governing rules to conclusion of a hand. I mean, again, at some point, when somebody, one player has felt that you've taken enough time, he's going to call the clock and you get a minute. That's really the governing rule, right?
Right. That's it. That's really all there is to it. I mean, I guess if they... No, because even then, how often are you going to be in that situation where you happen to make what's the highest hand, then gets beat within the last couple minutes of a giveaway, and then, you know what I mean? And then you're going to be stuck. I mean, how often is that going to happen in your life? So it's not like it's going to be somebody walking up to you and saying, okay, do it again, we're going to give you a penalty. Okay, well, the planets have to align before I'm ever going to get
the exact
that
same thing happen again. Exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And really, at that point, if you have the high hand and you want it, do you really care?
Yeah, that's true, too.
No, you know. Thanks. I'll take my $500. I'll go see a movie now. Maybe that Mississippi Grind movie's out there.
Or Mississippi Grind. Hey, you know what? I think today we get to conclude in O'Malley's move. Is that correct?
Sure.
I'm very excited. Here we go. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated in a $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em Casino cash game. The table is full of loose players, both of the passive and aggressive varieties. We've been playing patiently and start the hand with about $9.50, up $4.50. There are three limpers to us, and we look down at the Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Clubs. The way this table is playing, we would love to take this down right now, but we also wouldn't mind going to the flop against one opponent. We decide to make a raise. The table standard has been between 20 and 25, so we account for the limpers and make it 30 to go. It's folded to the button, who makes nearly a min raise to $64. He started the hand with about 300 less than us at 650. He is loose, but of the passive variety. I don't want to bloat the pot, but I also don't want to lay it down right now. I'd rather take a flop and see what happens. We call, and with the pot at 150, the flop is a pretty good one. The 9 of hearts, 5 of diamonds, deuce of hearts comes down. We are feeling confident with our overpair, so we lead out for an even 100, leaving us with just under 800. Our opponent wastes little time in nearly min-raising us once again to 212. What's the move?
I would have much rather checked this flop and reacted to our opponent. You know, I think had we done so, we might only be facing a $100 bet-ish, you know, whatever he's going to put out. which I think is an easier call instead of a 212 bet, which obviously is a little bit more thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest, the fact that he's min-raised both bets and done so quickly has me spooked by those monsters under the closet. You know, I know we're not supposed to be scared of them, but they're pretty fierce.
Under the closet. I love when you mix metaphors. It's so awesome.
It's like American Horror Story. Everything's in the closet, and then they're under the closet is when the stuff happens.
Do you watch that show, by the way?
I watched the first season. It was scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, Jeannie watches everyone.
So much that I forgot the monsters on the bed. So, you know. Yeah. No, it's scary stuff.
But, yeah, Jeannie watches it every year, right?
Freaky, yeah. And we watch it at night, which is the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Because then you're up all night, right?
Yeah, of course.
There's no way you're going to sleep after one of those episodes.
Yeah.
You really should watch it like at 9 a.m. and then just...
9 a.m. and then ruin your whole day.
Well, yeah. But, you know, then you don't have to worry about, you know, what happens in the dark, right?
Well, to stay with this theme, this screams better hand.
Anyhow, I was gonna.
Yeah, it screams better hand to me. Doesn't it scream better hand? I mean, like you said, the fact that he just min raises us every time we bet, and we only have jack-jack, you know what I mean? It just screams that we're getting our butt kicked here. I'm not even sure I could have check-called 100, because really,
what
do we do when another lower blank card hits on the turn and he bets again? I mean, okay, so you saved the 112 that you, you know, actually had to call if you wanted to stick around. But in the beginning, he's going to put out another $200 bet in the turn anyway. And you're not going to call that if a blank comes, are you? Because if you were good before, you're good now. So why call the 100 if, you know what I mean, if it was a $100 bet? So I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. I think I'm folding like you.
I guess my point is it'd be easier to call that bet than what we're facing now.
Sure, but I mean, to what end, though? That's the thing. Yeah, right. It's easier to lose $100, but who wants to lose $100
easily?
Yeah,
so it might have been the best thing we did was bet out here and then fold here.
Could be.
Check. Call.
Could be. Yeah, but that's what I was saying is I don't know if I could have check called 100. I don't know if I could have. Because I know that since we act first, we're going to have to check to him again, I mean. And he's just going to bet again if it's a crappy card on the turn. And if an overcome comes on the turn, we're folding anyway. So no matter what comes, unless it's a jack, so we got two outs to be confident. And I can't.
Right.
So
but you know what I love about poker too about this is every decision we make completely drastically changes the hand in some way.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm sitting here saying I would have checked and then I could have called the $100 bet, and you're right. Well, maybe I don't want to, right? But the fact that we bet out and we got that second piece of min raising quickly, which is a big part of my information on what I'm doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same years. That wouldn't have happened had we checked.
Right.
Because now the information you're getting is different.
Right. So you're saying that because we made it 30 and he made it 64 pre-flop, that we could be beat, but we might not be beat because of the way he acted.
Yeah, I'm
on
saying the
flop.
Fact that we bet out yet again and then been raised again.
Right. Because if we had checked and then he just bets 100, you're thinking, well, the last thing he did was just raise me pre-flop. He still could have ace-king and just betting a regular 100 as a continuation bet, so I could call that easier. You're right. So you're getting in some trouble there by not taking...
Oh, either way. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying which one's right or wrong. I just think it's fascinating that...
Right, it is.
A simple decision changes the information you're getting.
You're absolutely right. And I really hadn't looked at it that way, where if we had just checked the flop like we normally would do when someone takes control of a hand re-raising us, then you're right, we may have just called 100 if he'd bet 100, because it could look like anything. It could be tens for all we know at that point. It could be ace king.
Right.
And then you're saying, okay, I'm going to see if you're really for real. I'm going to call now and then see if I check on the turn, if you check behind. If you check behind and another blank comes on the river, I think I'm good and I'll bet. So you're right. There is another way of playing it. But now that we have to play it the way he played it, I'm letting it go.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We got more information that makes me feel less confident about my hand playing the way he did. Of course, it cost him $100. But my way, I probably would have put that 100 in two, maybe. I mean, you make some good points about maybe I wouldn't, but I think it's harder to fold a check $100 bet with what we know than it is to fold the fact that we bet out and got that min-raise again, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's costing us more, too.
Because, it's, you know, we're looking at a 9-5 deuce board here, you know. Again, the monster's under the bed in the closet scenario.
Well, now I have to know what goes on, so let's hear part two.
Hello again. I wish I could say this decision came easy to me, but it didn't. Let's try to narrow his range. He's loose, but passive. What would compel him to re-raise pre-flop and then raise our flop bet? it doesn't sound very passive to me. Could this be something like ace-king or ace-queen of hearts? Maybe he has an overpair higher than our jacks? I don't think he would have re-raised preflop with nines or tens. The more I think about it, the more I start to convince myself he's sitting on aces, kings, or queens. We're in a world of hurt if that's the case. We've put in 164 of our starting stack of 950, not nearly enough to make us pot committed. And if we fold, we are still positive for the session by almost 300, which is respectable. So that isn't persuading us to call. Can his range? So, best case scenario, in my mind, we're up against a flush draw and two overs. Worst case scenario, we need to hit a jack. I just don't think that's worth it. And even if we find a reason to call, what's our move on the turn if we don't improve? No, I don't like this spot. I think we can fold here and not lose an ounce of sleep. We do. Our opponent sighs and rakes in the pot. Queens? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes, even with an innocuous flop, the right move is to fold. You might have been way behind from the beginning. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, good decision, I think. I think, to me, the takeout is that how it illustrates the perils of being out of position.
Sure. I think I agree with you. I'm glad to see he folded. I really think he was behind, and the sigh indicates that he was behind. And I never like betting into an opponent who raised me preflop and has position on us on top of it. I mean, it's just, it'd be one thing if he was in the blinds and he raised our bet preflop, because then you know you're going to position on him after that. But you've got two things stacked against you here. And, you know, you only had jacks. You know, I'm glad we folded.
And, you know, the interesting thing is, given it's a cash game, right, versus tournament, you gotta play from all positions and do all kinds of stuff. But cash, I mean, again, it makes me think that, you know, if you just played hands in position, how much better you would be, right?
Yeah.
And particularly jacks, which are so difficult. So I'm not suggesting you fold those preflop because you're out of position. But, you know, if you look at all the bad spots that we've always been in on O'Malley or Hand of the Week, it always seems like that we're out of position, right?
Well, let me ask you this.
Cash, you kind of control to some degree.
I totally agree with that, and that's like the, you know, when we were talking, I think whenever we have a situation like this, we're always trying to make the easier decisions, like what are the fewest decisions you have to make, the easier decisions you have to make, and that's, so preflop, when he raised a 64... Now, obviously, we're not talking about results-oriented and all that, but knowing what we know now, would you want to make... Because we're talking about how Jack-Jack, you wouldn't want to fold it because you're not in position, but you want to make your decision as easy as possible. So, right. Yep. Would you consider betting again, four-betting it, and saying, okay, I'm making it... There's the 100 that I would have called later when I checked the flop to you.
I think it's a good point, because, you know, if you get four-bet here, then you know you're beat, right?
Right, because if this guy goes over the top of our... Well, I guess we raised first, so that would be 2-bet. So 3-bet. So we are 4-bet. If he comes over the top of our 4-bet preflop, you know your jacks are beat and you can let it go. And you don't have to worry about any of that.
Of course, if you do that, though, then you lose the opportunity to actually flop a jack.
Right.
Which would be highly profitable at that point, right? So that's the rub, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. That could be why guys play 4-bet a lot. You know, the aggressive guys go 4 and 5 bets because they know they're out of position the rest of the hand. They know they have a pretty good hand. They want to make sure this guy doesn't have ace-king. And they'll risk the extra 100 now rather than seeing a flop that scares their jacks later and calling it, or, you know, or something like that. So that's another way to play that hand, I guess. But
I'm kind of curious if anybody's actually done run the numbers. I'm sure somebody has. If you play every hand that you're on the button cutoff or hijack, regardless of what you have, and never play any other hand regardless of where you are, versus playing more traditional where, you know, if you get aces under the gun or something like that, you play it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if you have five deuce in the cutoff, you probably throw it away. Which works out better?
Yeah. I bet you something like Advanced Poker Training could probably run those numbers somehow.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, it'd be kind of interesting. Hey, that's a good tool actually to use just to experiment with that. I'm only going to play these hands in these three spots. Because I think in position, you're going to find yourself winning a lot more hands without your cards, right?
Right.
That's the whole purpose of playing in position. And that might make up for these situations where you have jacks, where, you know, every player in the world is going to raise preflop no matter where you are with jacks, right?
Yeah.
And then you get stuck in this kind of situation that is unfortunate.
Yeah. Jacks are a tough hand. They really are. And I know there's a lot of talk about it on the Poker Radius, too. They were, this week they were talking about it. So we'll see what they think of this situation and how we addressed it.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And we have a situation this week.
Oh, cool.
From Jeff Domenge.
Do I have to write anything down then, since it's a situation? Probably not, right?
Probably not, but yeah. I mean, it can't hurt, right?
Well, I don't know.
You know, I mean, does it cost you anything to write something down?
Hey, it costs me paper, you know. The more paper I have to write on, the more
you
I have to
replace it. You can type on a computer, and then you can just delete it.
Oh, man, everybody in the Antiup Nation would freak out. They hate it when they hear, like, clicking in the background. I know Zorag is, like, just freaks at that, so I'm not going to be typing.
Well, you need to get a soft keyboard, then.
I do have a soft keyboard. I have a soft keyboard. But it still makes noise. These mics are super sensitive.
All right, so only a two-paragraph situation, so I'll just read it. And you don't have to write anything down.
All right.
1-3 cash game in Shreveport, Louisiana. I visited there this summer. Very nice.
Nice.
He's put up a good stack to about 800 from a $300 buy-in. He says, you've been playing for several hours and have a good feel for the table, which all seems to be non-professional players. I would hope there's no professional players in a 1-3 cash game.
The villain
in this hand is a friendly kind of guy that has shown no signs of aggression so far. You're under the gun, look down at King of Clubs, King of Diamonds. You make it $15, get four callers.
Whoa.
$75 in the pot. The flop is a Jack of Hearts, Six of Hearts, Tray of Spades. You bet $50. Now everyone folds around to the villain in the dealer position. He shoves all in for $525.
Whoa. Tell me the suits again.
Jack of Hearts, Six of Hearts, Tray of Spades. So two hearts. We do not have a heart in our hand. We have the King of Clubs, King of Diamonds.
Ooh, man. Well, there is a flush draw. There's a straight draw. And there were just calls before. If he had a set of jacks or a set of something else, what's the point of shoving? Are you really protecting your hand that much? There's not that much in the pot.
It's quite a bit of an overshove.
That's a huge overshove. I don't feel like it's an online thing where the guy is just always overshoved because they figure they're going to get some idiot online to call. This feels like something is just amiss. I don't know what it is, but it feels like... I feel like it's tough that you're going to lose all this money if you're behind, but that's a huge bet. And the only hand that really makes sense is a set that would be losing to, I mean. That's the only hand we could be losing to.
Yep.
And doesn't make sense. Now, if you had a set here, I mean, unless you're absolutely
positive.
A two pair
could be.
Yeah, I know, but the hand that makes sense. You know, calls a $15 preflop, raise a deuce four or jack deuce. So, I feel like we need to call this, but it's so much money to win. Not that much money, really.
Well, again, this is one of these cash game situations where there's probably a good 50-50 argument out there, right? I mean, half the people might say, hey, you're up $500 from your bought in, right? So now you're using this extra $500 as weapons to make even more money that you didn't have before. So here's a situation where, you know, you make that call. If you hit, then boom, that's another $600 you've got. And if you lose, then you're right back to where you started from and you get to start all over, but you're still not down for the day. Whereas if you sat down and bought it for $500 and now every dollar you brought to the casino is online with this, that'd be a different
Let me ask you this. He made a point of saying this guy was friendly.
Friendly kind of guy that has shown no signs of aggression.
So. Yeah. Now, to me, this is aggression, but the one point I want to make is sometimes when I'm playing cards with friends or family that we're not playing for money, they're like learning the game for the first time, or they're just, it's just a friendly thing. It's not our home game kind of thing where we're kind of serious and we're playing for real money or real skills. So this, I'm wondering if this guy is so friendly that he's just overbetting so you don't lose any more money. And he's just like trying to have a good time. He's like, yeah, I'm all in because, you know, you're never going to call that and I don't want you to. I don't think that's possible, but it's just so weird that we made the point of saying he was friendly. That's not been aggressive. Because you don't need to be friendly and not be aggressive. You can just say he was passive, you know, but he said friendly. And I realize that's probably just a passing comment.
Yeah, it's
I was trying to read into it to see if that meant anything. I don't know if I could fold this. I probably could, because that's a lot of callers, you know, so there's a lot of possibilities out there that beat just my Kings. I only have one pair. So, I mean, I could call it just because it feels like this guy, if he's not that aggressive, maybe he thinks his ace-jack is good here.
You know, I was going to say, I mean, this could be an ace-jack situation where, you know, you've got 125 in the pot right now.
Right.
For a 1-3 cash game, that's not a bad pot, right?
Right.
So if you have ace-jack and you know there's a lot of danger here, you know, you got two hearts, you got the straight coming, you know, king, queen could come on the next two cards and just say, hey, 525 is such a huge overbet that someone's going to have me crushed to call that. Let's just do that and I'll win 125 bucks right now rather than do the hand-to-hand combat normal and end up finding a way to lose this hand.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, you could still, even if you're behind, you could still pop a winner on the turn of the river, but it's not likely, and to risk that kind of money when you're already up a bunch and crushing this game, I just don't. That's the other thing, too. When you talk about, I've heard this a lot, people talk about, if you're an inferior player going up against a superior player, heads up for a title, they say you want to play big pots with them, because you're taking the skill out of it, and,
right,
you know, you'd rather take a coin flip against someone than not, then try to outplay a pro. You're never going to outplay the pro. Eventually, he's going to beat you because he's the pro. So you want to play big pots. So in this case, why would I want to just say, hey, you know what? Here's $500 I've only put in. How much did you say he bet on the flop?
15 pre-flop and then 50. So
yeah, so okay,
65.
So you put 65 into this thing. You've got almost a grand in front of you or whatever the hell it is. So why would you want to risk 500 of your money with somebody who clearly is not aggressive, and you're crushing this table? Just say, you know what? Even if you don't have me beat, it's a good move, but I'm going to get that 55 pack from you next hand.
Exactly. See, that's the other 50 of the 50-50 proposition here. Right?
Yeah.
Say, hey, you know, why risk all this money for an overpair?
Yep.
On a board that has some runner-runner danger.
Particularly when you're superior to the players at your table. If they're non-pros and you're crushing it, you're going to get that money anyway, so why risk it on
one
hand?
You have a better spot.
Yeah, exactly. Better spot. So I'm going to fold.
All right. I think I am, too. Well, that was kind of boring.
That is kind of boring, but does we ever find out what goes on?
Yes.
Okay, well, this will be
spoiler
exciting.
Below. Sorry. Right. I went in the tank on this. With no signs of aggression so far, I have to assume he either has a set, likely either trays or sixes, or possibly the nut flush draw. I start talking out loud and say that he must have either. Oh, flush draw is actually an interesting way to play that as well, too. And think about that.
And that was why I asked earlier what the suits were, but I didn't think someone was going to put 500 in who's not aggressive, because that's an aggressive move. That's why I did ask that first about the suits, but I didn't think he would do that.
Depends if he's a smart, friendly kind of guy with no shows.
Yeah.
Then you wouldn't put him on that, right?
All right.
Audibly, I figure at best I'm up against 9 hard outs and 3 ace outs for slightly better than 50% odds. I lay it down as I think the set is more likely. He shows the ace of hearts, 10 of hearts. Wow, that's a flush draw.
He did do it.
He says, the next question, if the cards are face up, do you make that call? Call about 475 to win 700 on a virtual coin flip. So I think I'm about 54% there. That's too close of a coin flip in my humble opinion.
Yeah, what I don't think you? I do. I don't think I do. And that, I should have said that too, because that's the whole point of me asking what the suits were. Because I, you know, in my older days, I would shove on a flush draw because I think of my chips as a weapon. I don't think of them as money when I play, and I think you're not going to be able to call this huge amount for one pair here. You have to have a set to beat me. You know what I mean? And even if you have a set,
yeah,
I have
and that's a different spot than ace jack, which is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Now if you get called, now you got
outs to win.
4 outs.
I don't think I make that call if they're face up either. I think I still fold because 9 outs to the flush, 3 outs to the aces, 12 outs twice. You know, I mean, yeah, you're probably getting the right odds, but to me, I know I'm going to outplay you, which is better odds for me as the hand goes on. But I did think flush draw immediately when you said it, but I thought 500 bucks for a flush draw and somebody who's not aggressive didn't seem like they would do that. So maybe he is wicked smart and he realizes I wouldn't be doing this unless I had a hand, so you should fold. And he wanted to take down that 125, whatever it was in the pot.
Well, there's not a lot of players I don't think that would make that call anyhow, right? So, I mean, I think it's as weird as it sounds, it's a smart bet for him to make. knowing that you've got to have them crushed to make that call, right? I mean, we threw away kings, which I think most people probably would have at this one's a discussion. So, and then again, if they call, you've got outs.
Yeah, you got the hearts and you got the ace.
And it, let's say if we had called with the kings, then we also have the ace, right? Which is, so, I mean, whereas if I'm making that bet to begin with, I'm just thinking my hearts are the outs. So, I mean, that even makes it even better at that
point.
Yeah,
yeah. I really didn't think that the guy was going to make a flush draw, because that whole thing about the friendly and not aggressive made me not even mention it, really. Because I did think right away, if there's two hearts, a lot of people will shove on a heart draw. And because it's hard to call that. It's so hard to call that much money to win, you know, I mean, essentially you're winning his stack too, but right at that moment you've only risked, you know, $65 or whatever.
And another interesting thing about this too is, all right, so the reason you like to bet on the come is because that's where you get your value, right? If, you know, that heart comes, then, you know, the action shuts down. But you're really not making anything more here, right, by this raise. So if you just call the $50 bet, you're making the same amount, right? I guess what you're losing is the ability to just take it down without hitting your heart.
Yeah, because a heart doesn't come, and then a guy bets into you 100 or something. Now you're screwed. You didn't get that chance to see the last card.
But you could do it again at that point, but then you know that you have, you know, 50% chance less of hitting it, whereas now you've got two guards that come to hit it. So, yeah. I mean, you could make the same move on the turn, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I like the shove. I mean, that to me, that it's such a powerful move in Nolan Hold'em. You know, you really have to have something almost unbeatable to be able to call that amount of money with that hand. And even then, you know, the guy could have a random ace and be bluffing, but now he's got outs to beat you anyway. You know what I mean? It's a difficult call to make. It really is. Again, if they're a face-up, I don't know if I make that call. I realize I'm ahead, but if it's a coin flip, do I want to risk all my money on a coin flip? Why? When I'm crushing this
cash
game.
No reason.
Yeah, crushing this cash game. It's not like it's a tournament and you're needing to chip up and make the bubble and stuff. I mean, this is hey, just fold it. Another hand comes around. You're going to make $50 on the next hand anyway. Get that money back. So, yeah, that's an interesting hand. When you first said it and I said the suits, I really was thinking flush draw right away. But then something made me say, you know what? This guy's not aggressive, so if he's friendly, why is he doing this? He's doing it because he's already got a set and he's already got his beat and he's trying to make us fold. You know, I don't know. I went through a huge range of emotions in his hand. I don't like that.
I like things to be easy.
Yeah, I want it to be cut and dried ABC, man. That's what it's all about.
Oh, I love it.
All right, Jeff. Well, thanks for sending us the coin flip situation. Always appreciate those because I don't have to write anything down and waste paper. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.